Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a man who seems determined to douse himself in gasoline despite being made of matches to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the appeal to fear, also known as argumentum ad mitem, scare tactics, and argument from adverse consequences.
So appeal to fear is fairly straightforward, really. It's not It's not a complicated one. It is where you try and scare people into thinking that your opinion is correct, or that they should follow you or agree with you, because the alternative is just too awful to even think about.
That pervaded a lot in the Brexit stuff, and in fact, it got called
Project Fear.
You know, it got dismissed by calling it what it is. So that, you know, I shall be looking for that as the counter to this, where you just go, you're deliberately trying to scare us. But it's, you know, it turns out in Brexit land, this is all actually true.
Yeah,
Project Truth.
Now, it is incredibly common, because when people are trying to convince you of that their opinion is correct and their opponent's opinion is wrong, it's kind of an easy thing to do, especially when it's something that's going to happen in the future and you're saying, you know, this will be the consequences of you going along with what they want. It'll be awful. Yeah. It'll be the end of the world. But, you know, only I can save you, essentially.
yeah.
Which Trump almost literally said. He said, I alone can solve it. talking about problems, I think. It was terrorism or something, I expect. But
yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So our first example from Trump comes from one of Trump's many rallies, where he was talking about sanctuary cities and how awful it would be to be a sanctuary city or have one nearby.
But one of the biggest issues in this election is, in fact, sanctuary cities. McCready supports sanctuary city policies that force prisons and jails to release criminal aliens directly into your neighborhoods. Get out. Go ahead. Go into the neighborhood. Go into... What's your neighborhood? Where do you live? What? Rutherford County. Okay. So, how do you feel about having them release hardened, horrible criminals into Rutherford County? I don't think so.
The idea that they are going to be releasing hardened criminals into your city if you live near, or your village or your town, or if you live near a sanctuary city, is obviously scare tactics. It's obviously something that is designed for people to say, well, you know, yes, clearly sanctuary cities are a bad idea.
And the fact that he's saying that, it kind of explains what a sanctuary city is. A sanctuary city is the thing where they just set it up so they can release hardened criminals into the community.
Yeah.
No, it isn't.
No.
And then he kind of, it's, and then he does the stand-up routine. He goes, hey, where are you from? And he kind of, they go, yeah, Rutherford County. And then people in the audience go, yay, like that. They just not got it. And they're having just a couple of seconds before gone, moo, when he's saying, yeah, we're releasing bad. It's just stand-up, isn't it? Do you want people coming around your neighbourhood? Well, no, plainly not. You know, do you want monsters in your neighbourhood? No, but they don't exist either. You know, well, you know, yeah, do you want ghosts turning up around where you are? Because now they know where you live. It's just
and the thing
plain.
Is that the hardened criminals, if you want to call them that in that way, are released everywhere.
Horrible hardened criminals.
Horrible hardened criminals. Because these are people who have served their sentence for doing whatever it is they did. What's not happening in a sanctuary city is that, having served their sentence for committing whatever crime they committed, they're not then being turned over to immigration to get rid of them.
Yeah.
And that is what happens when American citizens commit crimes. They serve their time and then they get released into the community.
They get released into the community. Or some of them get elected to office.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. and then defend each other when they're there. Yes. Yeah.
So what Mention he's really no names, saying Rudy is, Giuliani. Do you want people who are not like you, people who aren't really Americans, to be released into your communities after they've been released from prison? So, yeah. That
and they go, the no, yeah, the other.
So our second example from Trump is right from the very beginning of his campaign, actually, when he was talking about getting rid of Muslims, basically. Again, similar theme, right? Yep. Really.
Yeah. But other people. Yeah. Yeah.
And
not like you.
And in one of his kind of stump speeches, he said this.
We can't live like this. It's going to get worse and worse. You're going to have more World Trade Centers. It's going to get worse and worse, folks.
We're going to have more World Trade Centers. Which, yeah, that's, I mean, it depends on the context, really. That could be a good thing.
Yeah.
But yes, more exactly. World Trade Centers being destroyed, not so good.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And that little bit at the end, I hate that when he goes folks,
yeah,
folks at the end, which just makes him kind of avuncular.
Yeah.
More like a homunculus, actually. You know, but in that kind of, I'm one of you guys, and, you know, the implication is I'm the only one that can save you. Vote Absolutely. For me, I won't really happen.
What he's saying is that if you keep voting for Democrats, then, you know, you're just going to get more terrorists. Do you want terrorists? Because that's how you get terrorists. So,
yeah,
that's, that's Trump, really, isn't it? That's just Trump all over.
Yeah.
So finally, we've got a tweet, which is actually from last week, I think. End of September. Because I don't know if you've heard, but there's a bit of an impeachment thing going on.
Oh, really? Yeah. The I word being a bit the impotence. Impotence? Yeah.
So, So Trump is trying to suggest.
Has actually, he got this, something to say about that?
Yeah. This was actually a quote from someone else that he has tweeted. It's not he's not saying it himself. He's kind of one person removed from it. But this was a Trump supporter called Pastor Robert Jeffress on Fox News. And Trump has quoted him as saying, if the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, brackets, which they will never be. I think that's probably Trump's parenthesis there. It will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal. So basically kind of threatening a bit of a civil war if he's held to account.
If you do that, it'll
crimes.
Be awful. Yeah. Well, I don't know and it says civil war in capital letters.
Yeah.
Like it was the civil war.
Like Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, yeah. But no colon. Yeah. 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 But from, yes, and that, and he does what he does, he's also saying, see, it's not just me who's saying this stuff. Other people are saying it independently of me, you know, which is debatable. Independently of me, they are pointing out the fact that this is going to happen. So, you know, just don't go there.
Yeah. And it's kind of an indirect appeal to force in a way, isn't it? Because he's not saying, I will bring down upon you great vengeance and furious anger. He's saying that other people will. there will be consequences, the likes of which you have never seen before if this happens to me. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the implication is just don't do it.
Absolutely.
You know, and peace will obtain.
Yeah, let me get away with it or there's going to be bad things.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, what a busy time. Nothing at all has happened in the past month in the political arena in Britain.
It's been quiet, hasn't it? Yeah.
It's been a little bit quiet. Well, there's one of the many votes that Boris lost was to have a recess of government so whilst they could go off and have the Tory party conference. And it got voted down, so they had to commute up the country and down again to be both in the House of Commons and at the Tory Party conference. At the Tory Party conference, which was pretty much, the party conferences, pretty much kind of electioneering kind of speechifying. The most chilling proponent of the argument from fear was our Home Secretary. It seems to be the job of the Tory Party Home Secretary to strike fear into the hearts of everybody and do the old thing of that the Tory party is the party of law and order. apart from the fact that they've broken the law and is completely disordered. And the current incumbent in the role of Home Secretary, which has been held in the past by Theresa May, the current incumbent is Priti Patel, who has got her eye on probably the prime ministerial job at some stage, because she quoted Margaret Thatcher in her speech. So it was a proper retro law and order that's just beat the hell out of everybody kind of speech. The irony being, she is a second generation Indian immigrant. Hence, you know, you could probably get the clue from her surname, Patel. So the odd thing is that white supremacist, racist, sexists are consequently quite conflicted about Priti Patel. She's very strong on law and order and immigration and taking control of the borders, but she is herself an immigrant. So they don't quite know what to do, I suspect. You know, those kind of bullet-headed Union Jack-wearing T-shirty thugs who just kind of go back to where you came from, but not you, because you can secure our borders. So the speech we're about to play, or the clip, is from her speech to the conference, and it's saying why you should not pick the Labour Party for the to be in power, not just because we don't want Jeremy Corbyn being the Prime Minister, but we don't want a Labour Party, a socialist Home Secretary.
Because the choice isn't who the people want to be our next Prime Minister. It's also about who the people want to be their next Home Secretary. Do we really want a Labour Home Secretary who would leave our communities and our country less safe? A Labour Party who wouldn't even attempt to take back control of our borders because they want to surrender our border control and extend free movement. And on policing, the Labour Party would stop the police from doing their job. And when it comes to our brilliant intelligence agencies, well, what can I say? The Labour Party trusts our foes more than our friends.
I think if one of the friends he's referring to is Trump, then yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the whole thing is, it's completely without any backing up of such encumbrances as fact or the truth. So I love the fact that there's one single clap,
yeah,
when it says, because they want to, you know, because they want to surrender our border control and extend free movement. And the one person goes like that, and he obviously gets shushed because, you know, so you're in the wrong conference, man. Stop clapping. And then what the bit over the applause is, this horrifying, chilling. So she's like a sci-fi robot. You know the robot in
Westworld.
It's got a combination of Westworld and iRobot. It's that kind of chilling, logical, you know, somewhat sexy sci-fi dystopian future bot who comes to the conclusion that humans are the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll break the Asimov rules of robotics just because it's logical to do so, and nobody's going to stop her. And it's just, and if you watch it, we'll put the link up on the show notes, go and watch it. And that bit just over that applause at that point, which is about 13 minutes in, it's just terrifying. It really did send a shiver down my spine. It's horrible. And it's just, what? And then later on in the speech, she says, oh, yeah, we're going to crack down on free movement once and for all. And then all the idiots in the audience go, yeah, all the people that were wanting to retire to France or, you know, or have their grandchildren come visit, you know, they've clamped down on free movement, can't do that. So, yeah, horrible. So, okay, the second clip I've got is, just before that, this was on the 25th of September in this year, which is the day with, you know, the first day back at school for Boris. The ruling to shut down Parliament had been deemed unlawful, so they all had to come back to work. And there's a the Corbyn did this excoriating speech where he kind of like ripped him to shreds and said, "Okay, finally, just give us some answers, you posh boy." And Boris this is his rejoinder, which is quite an interesting thing to listen to, because there's a strange stacking of arguments for fear, but then there's also a little bit of some sort. It might even be a slip of the mind, but I don't know. Have a listen.
Why won't they allow him to have an election, Mr. Speaker? Why won't they allow him to unleash his charms on the electorate? It's because they're not only terrified that he's going to lose, but also even more terrified by the remote possibility that he might win. He can't control his own party. He can't decide whether he's for Leave or for Remain. He's being held captive by his colleagues. The electorate are being held captive by this zombie parliament and this zombie opposition. And he wants the entire country to be held captive in the EU after October the 31st.
There's this weird thing where he kind of says, they're afraid. So I think there's two sets in there saying, you know, don't have an election because you might lose, but also you might win.
Even worse.
Yeah. Even worse, you might win. So there's both sides of the argument. On one side, it's like an imbalanced calculation, you know, where you've kind of got both of the things are the same side of the equal sign. And so it just doesn't work. But then there's that weird bit when he says he's being held captive. They won't have an election. Why would you elect this guy? Because he can't decide whether he's Leave or Remain. And then he kind of rambles off into he's holding the electorate captive. No, the electorate are being held captive by this zombie parliament, of which he is the executive. This is Boris's government, who's nominally the executive in charge of the parliament, though we have discovered over the last month that the parliament's just taken that away from him. So no, you can't have that. And so by implication, it seems that his government is the zombie as well. Basically, they're there. He's not got a majority. They've tried to escape any kind of scrutiny. They've been called out. They've come back. And he's now saying the worst, you know, it's even worse. We've got a zombie parliament, a zombie opposition, and he won't call an election. But so he's having it both ways. If we had an election, you don't want to vote for him because he doesn't know this, he doesn't know that, and he's holding us to ransom, and he doesn't want an election. So call an election, but don't call an election. He might win, he might not win. That's just this very odd, rambly stuff, which is quite depressing, but also very humorous. Street Preachers there with actually the appeal to fear fallacy. If you tolerate this, then your children will be next.
That's very fair. It's a good, good choice.
Yeah. I think I've hit upon a theme now. I'm going to try and make the song fit the fallacy.
Excellent.
Yeah. It's only taken 75,000 episodes to work that out. Yeah. But I thought I'd squeeze that in as example four. And I thought, oh, no, I'll make it the sting. Yeah, there we go.
So in the fallacy in the wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from the non-political perspective. And our first example this week is from Arrested Development, where, we get an example of George Bluth's parenting style.
See, you're as bad as Dad with his ridiculous lessons.
George Sr. had used his considerable means to stage intricate scenarios, to teach his children what he considered valuable life lessons.
I need help.
I'll get my gear.
Typically, these scenarios would involve a man named J. Walter Weatherman, a one-time employee who lost his arm in a Bluth Company construction accident.
Why are you here? I just remembered.
We're out of milk. I could have got it earlier if someone would have left a note.
Innocent man would still have his arm. Why?
And that's why you always leave a note.
Well, those lessons worked, didn't they? I mean, we still leave notes to this day.
Oh, that's what that was about. Mm. I thought he was trying to get us off dairy.
There you go. Yeah, unintended consequences. Ah, you see, that's the thing about the fear. You think you're appealing to one man's fear. It might be another man's, you know, fantasy. You might kind of go, oh, yeah, I thought he was trying to get us off dairy. Yeah.
I love the J. Walter Weatherman stories. They're so great. And no matter how many times that tactic is used, the Bluth children never quite seem to see it coming or know what's happening when he loses his arm. It's great.
Well, they're so traumatized by it each and every time. They just forget there's no kind of continuity. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great running joke. So the second example comes from Mean Girls, which we have, I think, featured before in this segment. Mm-hmm. And this is a sex education lesson with the gym teacher.
At your age, you're going to be having a lot of urges. You're going to want to take off your clothes and touch each other. But if you do touch each other, you will get chlamydia and die.
There you go. Simply enough.
Nice and simple. Straightforward.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's almost a slippery slope argument as well, isn't it? With a bit of fear thrown in. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you'll take off your, you'll get urges, you'll take off your clothes, you'll touch each other, you'll get chlamydia, you'll die.
Yeah.
So don't get urges, then you won't die. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there is definitely a crossover there, because there is part of the slippery slope is that the consequences of reaching the bottom of the slope are negative, are something that you don't want. And there's definitely a factor in there. And so our last example in this section is from The Simpsons, and it is when Ralph Wiggum goes to the dentist.
How often do you brush, Ralph?
3 times a day, sir.
Why must you turn my office into a house of lies?
You're right. I don't brush. I don't brush.
Let's look at a picture book. The Big Book of British Smiles.
That's enough. That's enough.
It's a bit like the Dustin Hoffman in Marathon Man.
And the great thing about that is that the last and worst of the British smiles is supposed to be Prince Charles.
Well, isn't there one of them where there's like the teeth are sticking out through the lips? I think I seem to recall that. Yeah. The Book of British Smiles.
And,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, and of course it works on Ralph, because this is an effective strategy to frighten people into thinking that they absolutely must choose your option, because all other options are just too horrible to even think about. And there's a bit of a kind of black and white fallacy crossover as well with the, false dichotomy, because people do tend to set this up as, it's either the thing I say is right, or this awful alternative.
Yeah, and nothing else.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's actually what we've been playing at, just to go back to politics for a moment. The Brexit thing, it's not been black and white. It's been always portrayed all along as black and white. So, in fact, you've got to
red, white,
leave
blue
and remain.
Brexit.
But there've been so many moves. It's actually been black and white, like a chessboard is black and white. There've been an infinite number of moves that have all been played out. It's a bit like Breaking Bad ran long enough to have all the ramifications of all the relationships between all the characters played out. And that's what why Brexit has had to run to three seasons, because we've got to get all of the possible crossovers and byways and shortcuts. It's like snakes and ladders as well. So that it's not just the black and white thing, even though, as we heard, Boris is still banging on with the black and white, you know, either this or we end up paying $165 billion a minute to the EU. It wasn't true then. It's not true now.
And just to mix our TV metaphors, like Walking Dead, occasionally large swathes of the main characters are just wiped out and we move on and get new characters.
And yet the plot continues. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, into the zombie parliament.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for fake news, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You've got to let me win or it'll be the worst for you. See, that? Yeah, that's simply it. See, okay. If you tolerate this, then the your children will be next.
Okay, so our theme this week is the word perfect, frankly, because because more than anything else in this impeachment thing that is going on, which we will talk more about in a minute, is Trump's insistence that his call with Ukraine President Zelensky was perfect. Mm-hmm. It was a perfect call. He said it. I looked it up. Kind of examples of him tweeting it and saying it in press conferences and things. 65 times in the last like week and a half, he has described his call as perfect. Basically he's trying to do a Jedi mind trick on the US population that if he says it enough, they will believe that it's perfect. And
these are not the calls you are looking for. Just repeating the same word over and over doesn't explain what he means by perfect.
It was perfect.
You know, you say, what do you mean by perfect?
You don't need President, to explain it.
Perfect.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Perfect is perfect. Brexit is Brexit. Yeah. How can you have a perfect call? What is a perfect call? It means he agreed to look into Biden. That would be the perfect outcome from that call, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It was perfect. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It's a perfect example of committing a crime. So,
it's the perfect crime.
he has in the past sometimes called people or things perfect. And so I thought I'd use some of them as examples this week. So, statement number one, this is in a joint press conference with Emmanuel Macron. He said, Mr. President, they're all saying what a great relationship we have, and they're actually correct. It's not fake news. Finally, it's not fake news. So it's a great honour that you're here. But we do have a very special relationship. In fact, I'll get that little piece of dandruff off. You have a little piece. We have to make him perfect. He is perfect. So it is really, really great to be with you, and you are a special friend.
Before he stabs him in the back about wine.
Statement number two.
Okay.
And this is about Ronny Jackson, the White House doctor who he put up to lead the VA, who then had to resign. But Dr. Jackson, I don't know, should I call him Admiral or Doctor? I call him both. Doctor/Admiral. He's a doctor, he's an admiral. His son is a top student at Annapolis, graduating this year. An incredible wife, incredible family. You know, I feel guilty. I feel guilty. Admiral Jackson was getting ready to leave service and he served many years admirably. Not a blemish. Perfect. Beautiful person. A lot of you know exactly. He actually said I was healthy.
That's how perfect he is. The perfect fool should be struck off, right?
Okay. And statement number three is about former Secretary of State John Kerry. John Kerry did a terrible job with Iran, terrible. I kept waiting for him to get up and walk away. Sometimes you have to walk away. If they're not giving you what you want, you walk away. But he didn't. The only time he walked away, this is perfect, it was when he entered a bicycle race and broke his leg. At 73, he enters a bicycle race. Perfect. I'll tell you something. I'll never enter a bicycle race when I'm negotiating a nuclear deal.
So the only time he walked away is when he broke his leg.
Yeah.
Okay.
On a bike.
Don't come running to me if you break your legs. Yeah. Yeah, at 73, he enters a bicycle race. I'll never enter a bicycle race. Well, you see, that's... see, that's got the perfect Trumpers stand-up gag ending, which I've learned to suspect that these your gag endings. Are they okay? With a Macron one, just a great relationship. Actually, correct. It's not fake news. Finally, it's a great honour. Okay, and the dandruff thing. That sounds familiar. Dr. Jackson, top, like a top student. Okay. Actually, she's not healthy. Well, I'm inclined to think that because of the gag at the end and the bicycle tin. Oh, no. Okay, I'm going to go with number two is the one that you made up.
Okay. So, of the other two, which would you say you're more confident about?
Number one.
Okay. So, number one is real.
Yeah.
Mr. President, they're all saying what a great relationship we have, and they're actually correct. It's not fake news. Finally, it's not fake news. So it's a great honor that you're here. But we do have a very special relationship. In fact, I'll get that little piece of dandruff for we have to make him perfect. He is perfect. So it is really... It is really great to be with you and you are a special friend.
What is he like? That does reveal that actually if there's something that people are saying that he agrees with, he then says that's not fake news.
Yeah.
Finally not fake news. So so fake news is just, it's a synonym for I agree with them.
Well, I mean, he's previously come right out and said fake news is anything that is negative about him, basically because he doesn't think it's possible to genuinely say anything negative about him. So anything negative must be fake news by definition.
Must be fake. Because he's perfect in every way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah, practically perfect.
Number three, you think is real?
Yeah, I do.
Number three.
I'm beginning to doubt it.
Is fake news.
Oh, knew it.
Yeah, you suspected.
Should have gone with the Emperor. And then I suddenly turned around and went, well, that would be the kind of faux pas that he would make about the break his leg, walked away, broke his leg. I mean, that's terribly well written. Actually, in that case, one.
That bit I did make up. The bit where he said, "I'll never enter a bicycle race when I'm negotiating a nuclear deal." He almost pretty much said that word for word a few times.
Whoa.
He loves to bring up this anecdote. It's just he finds it hilarious that John Kerry broke his leg when he was in a bicycle race during nuclear negotiations. Yeah.
It's just crap, isn't it? But yeah, no, really nice. Yeah. And sticking in, this is perfect. There you go. That seals the deal. Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, no. So that
means number two.
The stupid nonsense in number two, when he's trying to find another word other than top and can't.
Top, like a top student. Yeah. So
yeah,
that is real.
But Dr. Jackson, I don't know, should I call him Admiral or Doctor? I'll call him both, Doctor/Admiral. He's a doctor, he's an admiral. His son is a top student at Annapolis, graduating this year. Incredible wife, incredible family. You know, I feel guilty. I feel guilty. Admiral Jackson was getting ready to leave service. And he served many years admirably, not a blemish, perfect, beautiful person. A lot of you know exactly. He actually said I was healthy.
it's just, oh my God, it's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like a top. It sounds like Top Cat.
You know? Yeah. It basically, this guy said something nice about me once, so he's the best person ever.
I'm just going to... I'm going to make up the rest of everything. Yeah, he's got like a top student. He's a really top student. I've no idea who he is, what he's studying, where he is in his class. He might be the guy that got, sent down for setting fire to the principal's car, you know, but he's a, he's a top student because he once said something nice about me, like I was healthy for that. But, you know, it's a bit like getting your car tested once a year to make sure it's roadworthy. It's only valid for that day. You know, you might have said, well, yeah, you're healthy this minute, the moment that you breathe out or do that huffing thing that you, when you're trying to keep your teeth in, then if you'd ask me then, I would say you're unhealthy. But yeah, God, that's just a beautiful person. A lot of you know exactly. What does that even mean?
I don't know.
What does that even mean?
It's just something for his mouth to do while he's thinking of something else. So
whilst his brain is running around trying to find something in there other than old porn star numbers. Yeah.
All of which means that, unfortunately,
You
didn't get it this week.
Well, you know what's going to happen now.
The zombie
parliament have been knocking on your door. Yeah. Oh, no.
But on the upside, in a very pleasing Douglas Adams kind of way, your percentage is now 42.424242.
Oh, there you go. You know. That's very nice indeed. Yeah.
Can't really.
Well, I'm glad that happened. Yeah. No, because that's the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Yeah, recurring. Hey, it's time for the part of the show that this week, at least, is called "Impeachment is Not a Logical Fallacy."
Yay! Yay!
We finally got there.
Yeah. God, what took them so long?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Finally. Nancy Pelosi has decided that all of the other stuff that Trump did that he got away with, this is too far. This is a step too far.
This is just one too far. Yeah.
More likely and more realistically, this is one that she can easily explain to the American people.
And it is
fairly easy to explain. So you've heard about this undoubtedly from lots of different places. The awareness amongst the population about this whole scandal is actually incredibly high. It's something like 90-something% of Americans aware, you know, have a decent amount of information about the Ukraine call and its implications.
That's not the 98% he was talking about the other day.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, 98%.
Unusually high reception of the news on this matter.
Right.
So that's good. People are paying attention and his approval ratings have gone down and down, and approval of impeaching him has gone up and up to now higher levels than Nixon or Clinton ever had. Of people thinking it's time to impeach him or supporting an impeachment inquiry, at least.
Does that extend to inside the Senate as well?
Not so much. No, there's still it's quite a lot of Republicans who are just, I don't know, stubbornly refusing to accept the facts.
Yeah,
it seems
worried about their jobs.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, clinging on to power. Well, you know, it's not an unfamiliar thing that's occurring in our Houses of Commons.
Yeah, but I mean, some of them, they're just keeping silent about it, and some are really quite impressively bending themselves into pretzels to figure out ways to
try and
defend it.
Right.
But yeah, so the basic facts are that Trump called the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, and kind of tried to pressure him. Perfect call.
Right.
In which he tried to kind of pressure him into digging up dirt on Joe Biden and his son, Hunter Biden.
And they said, well, if you do, we will only give you the thing we're going to give you, or not do away with the blockages that would stop us giving you the thing we're going to give you if you provide us with that information.
Essentially.
Is that a little bit of what they did was they
froze military aid that they were going to give to Ukraine. And Ukraine is an incredibly poor country, currently under severe threat of being kind of taken over or attacked by Russia, and really needs military aid. And the amount that they were give or had pledged to give them for kind of American
budgets is ridiculously small, but for Ukraine budgets is amazingly huge, and so it's important that they get that money. And a week before the call, Trump froze an amount of money that Congress had approved to go to Ukraine. And there was...
Because he's got an eye on his relation with Putin, because surely there's a little bit of... I wanted to say conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
Between his relationship with Putin, who he loves, and the fact that he's the one breathing down Ukraine's neck. And
I mean, there are several reasons why he could do this. He could be doing it to advance his own personal interests. But the main one in this case seems to be his request for information about Biden and investigation. And anyway, well, let's go through what actually happened. Mm. Because once that call was made, and a number of officials were on the call or listening into the call, including, it seems, Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, who initially denied knowing anything about the call and then later admitted that he was actually on the call as well. And
I thought you were talking about somebody else. Yeah. Some other Mike Pompeo. Yeah.
And so this information about this call, where people heard exactly what Trump said, went around the intelligence community a little bit. And we think probably a CIA agent was informed about this call and talked to a number of people who heard about it or who were there, and became a whistleblower. He initially wrote, or she possibly, wrote a kind of a complaint about it, wrote a letter to say this happened.
This isn't quite right.
Isn't really good. Yeah. Apparently went to their boss initially and were told, we're not going to do anything about this. Then possibly went to the... to Adam Schiff, who is the head of the House Intelligence Committee, and was told that what they needed to do was go to the Intelligence Services Inspector General, Intelligence Community Inspector General. And so they did. And the ICIG is a Trump appointee, but looked at this complaint and thought, yes, this is a concerning call. And it is of urgent concern and needs to be investigated and looked into. And so they then escalated that to the Director of National Intelligence. Now, at that point, the Director of National Intelligence's job is to forward that to Congress, to the Intelligence Committee in Congress. And the law says that they shall do that within 7 days of receiving the complaint.
Right.
What happened was that the acting DNI, the Joseph Maguire, who'd been in the post about a month, I think, by this point, he decided, which is not what he's allowed to do under the law, that this wasn't actually an urgent concern. It wasn't something that needed to be forwarded to Congress. And instead, despite the fact that the complaint was about Trump and mentioned Bill Barr in it as being involved, he went to the Department of Justice and the White House
and said,
what do you think I should do about this?
I should do, and they went,
we think that you shouldn't do anything about it, basically.
No, just sit on that. What?
So,
is he still in office, that guy? Is he still
Jason
there?
Why? He's still there.
Weirdly.
Apparently then it's a little bit unclear exactly what the sequence of events was, but it seems maybe the whistleblower approached again the House Intelligence Committee, having realised that this wasn't actually going the way it should go.
Getting anywhere,
And part of the rules of this kind of thing about whistleblowing include going to the House Intelligence Committee. That is a thing that the members of the intelligence community are allowed to do under this law. So that's completely allowed. And at that point, Adam Schiff was alerted to it, basically, and started asking questions and started asking for a copy of the complaint and a copy of the transcript of the call. Now,
right,
there eventually that came through. At first, the White House was saying, no, you can't have it. Don't be ridiculous. You're committing treason by asking questions about this and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually they...
How dare you look at the king?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Trump was saying, oh, yeah, it's fine. We'll release a transcript. It was a perfect call. And the transcript, incidentally, which the officials who were on the call, I guess, had decided that actually this particular transcript didn't need to be kept on the server where they usually keep the transcripts of calls with foreign leaders. This needed to be kept on a completely separate code word top secret server where this is code word clearance is higher than top secret. So basically it's not just, it's not just people with top secret clearance who can see it. You have to also specifically be told you can see this particular thing. So it was kept on a completely different server that is designed basically for national secrets, national security.
Right. Didn't Trump complain about Hillary doing something similar about stuff on other servers?
Well, yeah, with Hillary, his complaint was that it was her own personal server that she was using for official business. Whereas this is kind of the other direction completely.
This is
using a way more classified server than you would normally need for a normal call, designed to say leader. Hi to another leader, basically. And some officials at the time said, well, this isn't right because there's nothing national security here. Apparently, this isn't the first time that a call has been pushed onto this server or things have been put onto this server that aren't necessarily of national security issue, but just a kind of political interest to Trump's opponents.
So Russia, if you're listening,
well,
if you can find those.
And that might be something that would be necessary if it wasn't for the fact that Trump is so confident that he's never done anything wrong. And it's just annoying that people are even going after him at all, that they agreed to release the transcript of the call, and they released it, and it said basically exactly what the whistleblower said it would say, and it has Trump saying he essentially says, "We do a lot for Ukraine. We've been very helpful for you. I'm not seeing a lot of reciprocity. I'm not seeing you kind of helping us. And you know, we help you out a lot. The EU doesn't help you. They should help you more, but we help you a lot. And you know, you should be grateful, basically." And Zelensky is saying, well, yeah, we're very grateful. Thanks very much. And we're ready to buy some more missiles from you. And at which point Trump says, I'd like you to do me a favor, though. Like in response to that, to talking about buying Javelin missiles. And so, that kind of sounds like it's if you want these things from us.
Yeah.
You got to do something for me.
You've got to do something for us, you've got to grease our palms.
Now, that isn't the point where he asked the Ukraine president to investigate Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. That, bizarrely, is the point where he brought up a weird conspiracy theory, like a QAnon type thing, about one of... Well, it's kind of a mixture. It's as QAnon conspiracy theories tend to be, it's a mélange of crap. And it's he talked about CrowdStrike. He said, you've got some very wealthy people there and they've talked about this CrowdStrike thing and maybe it's in the Ukraine and maybe you can help us with that if you can find it. And what he's talking about, CrowdStrike are the company that looked into the Russian hacking of the DNC servers during the 2016 election. And so the CrowdStrike, a kind of private security firm, like computer security, that wasn't related to Hillary's email server. That was a separate thing. The CrowdStrike conspiracy people think that firm wasn't kind of, they made up that it was Russia. They manufactured evidence that it was Russia. And there's a missing server. There isn't a missing server, but they say that CrowdStrike, for some reason that no one's quite clear about, took that and put it in Ukraine, hid it there for some reason.
Right.
Nobody really knows why. And also somehow that DNC server has Hillary's emails on it that she deleted and, you know, acid washed from her own personal server. Which seems to just have been randomly brought in because people are talking about emails. And so, yeah, why not? The weird thing is, this is a call between two leaders that Trump didn't, it wasn't getting released. So this isn't something that he is trying to kind of push a conspiracy theory about Hillary. This is something which suggests he believes it and wants the leader of this foreign country to help him find it.
So can you just find this server? It's hidden somewhere in the country, Ukraine, beginning with you. Yeah.
Which is kind of scary.
It's two foot tall beige box, probably got IBM on the front. What the hell? That is very, because you would that fits with the bumbling paranoid idiot bit, whereas the other bit about seeking some help from Joe Biden, and I think that's part of, about Joe Biden, I think that's part of his innocence that he protests that he has, is just naive stupidity. He's not innocent, he's just naive and stupid about how guilty he appears and how illegal the things that he's doing are. So, you know, when he said, yeah, can you just look into that? And he just kind of said, yeah, China should do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, just comes out and says it out loud in front of people.
Yeah.
And he thinks that he's completely justified in his anger at that. And why can't people see what he's saying? Yeah. Why can't you just see the sense of this?
One of the things that president, he has tweeted all in the last week is, I have an absolute right to ask other people to investigate on my behalf, basically.
No, you don't.
And essentially the problem here, in case it's not clear, is Trump is asking for something of value from a foreign leader. And in order to help his political campaign, because this is about the Biden thing, he's asking, the Hillary thing is gone. You know, Hillary isn't running. It's nothing.
It doesn't exist.
That's just for his ego.
It doesn't exist.
But the Biden thing, it's you know, Biden is arguably the front runner, depends on the poll you listen to. But he is trying to get something that he can use to sink Biden's campaign with who he thinks he will be running against. And he is asking a foreign power to give him something of value that he can use against his political opponents. And in return for that, he will do something for them. Now, that quid pro quo isn't required breaking bribery laws, basically. There is no requirement for quid pro quo for him to have done something illegal, unethical. But he still, there is quid pro quo there.
Yeah, you know, as well.
It's not,
on top
it's
of
not,
it.
Not yeah. there. It's just not necessary.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But the other stupid thing is that he thinks that he could do this despite that Robert Mueller fella saying, you did this with Russia. And he's going, no, I didn't. And it turns out he did. And that was bad too. Exactly the same thing.
He did this like 2 days after the Mueller report. Oh, no, after Mueller testified to Congress, he did this. Mm-hmm. So a couple of days, and he referred to it in the call. He said, you know, you've seen this thing where with Robert Mueller, and he made a fool of himself in front of Congress, basically. So to get to the Biden thing, he then also asked him to look into the stuff about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and kind of corruption there, and mentioned the prosecutor that Biden had fired, essentially. He convinced Ukraine to fire. And the conspiracy theory there is that Hunter Biden was working for a Ukrainian company. The prosecutor was investigating the company, and Joe Biden used his political influence to get the prosecutor fired so that he wouldn't look into Hunter Biden's company. That's what people, Republicans or Trump base, think happened because that's what they've been told happened. What actually happened was that Hunter Biden was on the board, an advisor on the board of a Ukrainian natural gas company, called Burisma Holdings. And it's unclear why they hired him to be on the board. They were paying him $50,000 a month. He doesn't have any particular expertise in that area or knowledge of the Ukraine or or particular reason to be on there. But to be honest, companies hire people who they think might have some influence or even that are connected to someone that they think that, you know, maybe they'd like to meet
someone
like that. Yeah.
Someone like Jared Kushner, for
exactly.
instance. Or Donald Trump Jr.,
you know,
for instance.
You, as a filmmaker, if you were looking for an assistant and Martin Scorsese's grandson applied, he'd have a good chance.
Snap your mouth. Yeah.
Regardless, really, of his level of competence.
Yeah. You know, he might be a horse rider, but I don't care. You know, so, there might be a chance you'd get Marty to come and watch it.
Absolutely. You know, there's just that connection to fame and, you know, notoriety and stuff like that. So for whatever reason, Hunter Biden was on this advisory board. You know, yes, maybe there's something dodgy in there. Who knows? By all means, investigate. Whatever, that's fine. Although, you know, someone legitimately should investigate it. The point is, this company, Burisma, was apparently under investigation, and not by this particular prosecutor, and the investigation was dormant for a year before the prosecutor was fired, and the prosecutor was fired for not investigating corruption.
Oh, right.
And not just Biden and the US government, but the various members of the EU, the International Monetary Fund, lots of people were saying, this guy is not doing a job. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. He's not investigating corruption. He's letting corruption happen. He should be fired. And so by getting him fired, if anything, they made it much more likely that the company that Hunter Biden is connected to was going to be investigated. If there was anything to look at, then getting rid of the person who was letting corruption just go was increasing that chance. So basically, there's no basis for the rumors about Biden. No evidence, nothing concrete to suggest it, and lots of things to suggest that actually it's the opposite of what people say. But it's enough to just keep bringing it up for some people. If you keep saying it, then it you know, has that effect of tainting them. And that seems to be all really it is.
And that's Trump's approach, isn't it? Yeah. To get somebody. It was a bit like his tweet earlier where he has somebody out that isn't him saying what he would say.
Yeah.
It gives it some legitimacy beyond him just making stuff up.
Yeah.
So if he can get a foreign government to find out this stuff about Biden and say this stuff about Biden, then it would do for Biden in a way that Trump's saying it can't.
Absolutely.
Because Trump's just lost his complete credibility anyway, because he's just Trump. So he's seeking. And he's, you know, he's kind of trying it on with China and trying it on with whoever, just to say, oh yeah, you should look into that. And just stop, stop it. This is up. It's, you know, it's behavior unbecoming of a president. It's probably, you know, heinous crimes and misdemeanors. So it's you are going to get impeached, matey. that's it.
And one of the things that Trump's defenders are saying, including people who are lawyers who should know better, is this is hearsay. This is just, it's not, you know, the whistleblower didn't have any personal knowledge. They weren't on the call. They just talked to other people who had knowledge, and this is like secondhand information. It shouldn't be allowed.
Right.
You can't convict people on hearsay. And also there's this claim, mostly from the Federalist, where they say that the form that you kind of fill in to do whistleblowing was changed the week before to mean that before that you had to have first-hand information to be a whistleblower, and after that you didn't have to have first-hand information. And they claim that, you know, something is afoot there. And first of all, just on the form, no, it wasn't.
It was changed. They did bring out a new form in August. The whistleblower used the May 2018 version of the form, which before that it had boxes for, you know, how I came by this information, and box number one is I have personal information about it.
Oh, was there? Yeah.
Box two is I learned about it from other people, and then box three was like a mixture of the two. Both. There's one of the boxes says other employees of the company, and the third box is other third parties. The thing about first-hand information is there was in the past, including on the form that this whistleblower filled in, it said that in order to consider this a matter of urgent concern, there has to be information from people with first-hand knowledge.
Yeah.
So the Inspector General has to not just base it on kind of third-party information. They have to do a bit of investigation and find people who have direct information about it. And at that point, they can forward it up the line. And that apparently happened in this case. They did investigate. They did talk to people who were on the call and who did have direct knowledge of it and before they passed it up.
That corroborated the evidence.
Yeah.
And highlighted the urgency and the concern.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And here, as for hearsay, that's just that's not what hearsay means on a legal basis. Is that so? What hearsay means from a legal standpoint is any statement which is introduced in a court case where the statement was made outside of the courtroom, like before the case started, which is being introduced to prove the factual basis of that statement. So if you say that person told me they were under 18 when you're accusing them of something, and if that statement is being introduced to prove that they are under 18, that's hearsay. Yep. You need better evidence than that, and there is plenty of better evidence you can get. But this isn't this is third-party information. This is information which is not being introduced as evidence at the moment. What it is giving people a reason to investigate something, and plenty of investigations. In fact, the vast majority of investigations are started based on third-party information. They're based on someone saying, I heard this about someone, or someone told me that guy did something, or he told me he did something. That's still third-party information.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how investigations get going. And then you talk to the people who do have direct information about it, and then you get, evidence. Like, for example, a transcript of the call, which was released by the White House.
By the very people at the heart of the hearsay.
Yeah.
In inverted commas. Yeah.
So the hearsay argument is just so ridiculous and can't possibly get anywhere. And it's just something to say. It's just something that people who don't have a leg to stand on will bring up in an argument on TV.
In order to undermine the strength of the evidence of their own eyes of the transcript which they themselves released and then said, oh, no, it's just hearsay.
Yeah.
There was nobody there that heard this, but here is the transcript of what? They're kind of trying to undermine their own provision of the evidence, which they were asked for as a result of the whistleblower saying something.
Yeah, and they proudly provided and then claimed it's stuff it didn't say. So if you are interested in learning more about this and finding out more about the legal basis of hearsay and about what's actually happened and the whole rules around the intelligence community, Inspector General, all of that stuff, I suggest you go and find the Opening Arguments podcast, who for the last kind of 2 weeks have been doing brilliant episodes about that. And I'm absolutely sure we'll continue to do brilliant episodes throughout this impeachment process. And they're just amazing and very, very helpful to anyone who doesn't already know all this stuff, like someone like me, for example. I've learned a lot.
Yeah. So, or indeed the members of the staff in White House.
Yeah. So, go and check out Opening Arguments, and we will continue to try and bring you the updates as they come.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
This week, I thought I might do a special headline section where each one talks about a different crime Trump has committed since the impeachment investigation started. But we've been off for a month, so there's quite a lot of other news. So I'll limit it to the incident where Trump committed the crime he's claiming the whistleblower falsely accused him of, live on TV. While claiming he didn't put any pressure on Ukraine to investigate Biden, he then said that they should, and also that China should investigate the Bidens, 30 seconds after saying, "I have a lot of options on China, but if they don't do what we want, we have tremendous power." It's basically like if Colonel Nathan Jessup was asked if he ordered the code red, and after saying, "You're goddamn right I did," ordered Kevin Bacon to give Tom Cruise a code red right there in the courtroom.
In what looks like an attempt to be King Canute, the Wizard of Oz, something out of Raiders of the Lost Ark and a 1970s Bond movie villain, or maybe just a designer for a level of Fortnite, Trump is back in the "why can't I just have my wall my way," asking for a moat with alligators and snakes in it, and electricity running through it, and spikes on the top, as well as trying to recategorize shooting people in the legs as something one is allowed to do. After all, they're wielding Stone Age firearms. No, sir, they are stones. Despite the fact that this is all illegal, inhumane and just batshit crazy, the UK's independent newspaper reports that the moat and alligators were actually costed.
That's brilliant.
One day, of course, one of the alligators will swallow a clock and haunt Trump's every tweeting moment, a fitting end to the boy who never grew up.
What kind of company gets a request for that, saying, okay,
yeah,
right, what we want is a 1,000-mile-long moat
long.
Filled with snakes and alligators. And they would think, well, yeah, I mean, we can give you a price for it.
We could do that. Give you that. Yeah.
That's so
it's
amazing.
Not just your parts, you see, it's the ongoing maintenance.
Absolutely. You've got to feed the alligators.
What happens when you've got to feed the alligators?
In some of those areas, not enough migrants will fall in. So,
and some of them will starve. And in the other places, there'll be too many. So you'll have to shift the offspring. So, that, you know, there's transportation costs for just moving alligators around. You can't just put them in a U-Haul. You've got to have, you know, and snakes. A lot of people don't like snakes. So you're going to have to find proper handlers and everything. Yeah.
Trump has a long history of inviting foreign leaders to the White House, holding a joint press conference and totally making it about him. But last week, when Finnish President Niinistö visited, Trump took questions and, rather than answering, delivered a series of unhinged, barely coherent rants. When Reuters reporter Jeff Mason asked him again to actually answer his question, Trump channeled Travis Bickle, saying, "Are you talking to me?" And then loudly and repeatedly insisted Mason ask the president of Finland a question instead. Niinistö, meanwhile, just looked at the camera like Jim from The Office.
And when he did ask him a question, Trump jumps in and answers,
interrupted and
answers on behalf of Trump. Yeah. Can I have a fanfare, please? Because he is back. Our favourite professional liar, well, second favourite after the Tangerine Scarecrow, he's back. Yes, Jacob Wall is back holding press conferences. Yeah, with his far from trustworthy sidekick, Jack Berkman, to announce their latest scoop, newsflash, byline. Okay, out and out bullshit. Apparently, Elizabeth Warren gets her septuagenarian jollies by paying gigolos for threesomes. Give it up, Jake. Surely you know your stories are getting far-fetched when even Breitbart and Fox News don't turn up at your presser and when the bouncers refuse to throw people out for laughing. Warren did, of course, confirm she once went to Houston University and that she does therefore root for the Cougars. Rawr.
The very first witness in the big, huge impeachment investigation, former US Special Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Volker, only former because he resigned immediately after the whistleblower story broke, has given Congress over 60 pages of text messages and other documents, some of which are really quite bad for Trump. For example, there's the text from former US Ambassador to Ukraine Bill Taylor, which said, "I think it's crazy to withhold security assistance for help with a political campaign." This was replied to by Gordon Sondland, US Ambassador to the EU and major Trump donor, who didn't sound anything like a mobster who thought his brother might be wearing a wire, when he texted back, "Bill, I believe you're incorrect about President Trump's intentions. The president has been crystal clear, no quid pro quos of any kind. The president is trying to evaluate whether Ukraine is truly going to adopt the transparency and reforms that President Zelensky promised during his campaign. I suggest we stop the back and forth by text." Let's stop talking about this stuff in a format that's being recorded.
Yeah, Bill Taylor takes it back. There's somebody watching, isn't there? And he went, yes. So, in moments of crisis, who do you turn to? Someone who might have formed a plan based on experience, legal principles, and intelligence, rather than, say, the mastermind behind such game-changing moments as firing James Comey from the FBI, thus ushering in the appointment of one Robert Mueller, and what was that thing he did? Oh, yeah, the investigation. Yeah, and who was that mastermind? Ah, good old son-in-law Jared Kushner, who Trump has turned to again in his hour of need to defend his position in regard to casually asking Ukraine to interfere in the upcoming US elections and the attendant impeachment inquiries. Oh no, you say. Who's going to solve the Middle East problem now? And of course, goddamn, if only Jared had, like, studied law or something. Still, when you've fired everyone else, there's always and only family left. The Borgias, anyone?
If you're still curious whether Democrats or Republicans are the good guys, look no further than the North Carolina State House, where a morning without any votes was scheduled for September 11th to allow lawmakers to attend memorials for the victims and first responders. While Democrats mourned, Republicans had a secret plan, ensuring that enough stayed behind to hold a surprise vote to overturn the Democratic governor's veto of the state budget. I don't have a joke here because I just couldn't believe that that actually happened.
No. Yeah. So, Boris, did anything interesting happen this month? Well, only a lifetime of British politics in that month. And I'll attempt to do it in 60 seconds, which, let's face it, is longer than Boris has ever done anything real in politics. Okay, Jim, start the clock.
Okay, go.
A member of his Tory party joined the Lib Dems walking across the floor of the House live in the middle of a Boris speech, effectively removing a working majority of one. Boris's own brother then resigned his Ministry of Transport job because of Boris's stance. Boris then went on to sack 21 members of his own party who voted for the Benn Act and decimated his majority further. The Benn Act is a law Parliament passed, which means that the Prime Minister would have to ask the EU for an extension to Article 50 beyond the 31st of October if he cannot get a deal agreed by Parliament, i.e. we cannot leave with no deal. But he continues to espouse the existence of Schrodinger's Brexit in that he says he will not break that law, but we will leave on the 31st of October, deal or no deal. Boris has put 7 motions to the vote in the House of Parliament since he took office as PM and lost all 7 of them. The Supreme Court of England ruled that his prorogation of Parliament was unlawful. He did it for political ends and was thus void and of no effect, should be quashed. So he had to stop being asked awkward questions by members of the public in the street and come back and get asked them by members of the House of Commons. He stands of accused of giving public money during his time as mayor. No, and there's so much more to go. He stands accused of giving public money during his time as mayor of London to a US company owned by a woman with whom he was having an affair at the time. The ex-Tory Chancellor, Philip Hammond, sacked by Boris, is publicly declaring that unseen financial puppet masters are instructing Boris to crash out of the EU with no deal because they're all shorting the pound and will earn billions overnight. And today in Uxbridge, his own constituency, an old lady, when asked about Boris, said,
"Whoever mentioned that name in front of me, that filthy piece of tow rag."
Which probably doesn't need translating for our American listeners, just visualising. And yet, the Tories are still leading the opposition by 15 points in some polls. Sound familiar? No wonder Corbyn says this is a Trump Brexit.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this episode. You can find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
And if you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our newest patron, Lauren Phillips. Thanks very much, Lauren. Much appreciated.
You can also connect with us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump. And there's currently 99 members. So if you want to be member 100, go there now and sign up.
Yeah. And there's some great stuff being posted up there. It's terrifically funny. All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out 3 Trump quotes, 2 of which are real and 1 I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news. So, yeah.
And I've got nothing to say.
You've got nothing, you know. Normally you say something related to the
episode.
At that point, but no. Okay,
I suddenly went blank. I'm going to say something Yeah.
Okay.
You've got to let me win or it'll be the worst for you. See, that? Yeah, that's simply it.